As we begin our discussion for this morning, I want to state from the outset a disclaimer that that the topic I'm tackling here is quite ambitious. There are a lot of different angles from which this could be approached. There are a lot of sources that could be included. This truthfully could be a multi-part discussion, but with the time that we have for this morning, I wanted to try to be as broad as possible. So I hope that that the sources are comprehensive enough and broad enough, but also reflect the proper nuance. And yet there's more that I could say that would also enhance the topic, but obviously can't be done right in this moment. I want to begin framing this topic. Do Jews have a mitzvah to influence the values of American society? So my starting point comes from a book called Headlines. The book Headlines is based on a podcast, formerly a radio show, called Headlines. It's actually now called Halacha Headlines, but the show is run by David Lichtenstein, who is the CEO of the Lightstone Group. He's involved in real estate development and investment. He's a very successful businessman, but also a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He interviews many Gedolim on his show and really holds his own. So he had a very interesting episode and included this in one of his books. The topic was Light Unto the Nations or None of Our Business, Influencing Gentiles to Observe the Noahide Laws. So in some ways this is a little bit more of a limited version of my question. I'm not just interested in Noahide Laws, but the question I want to consider is, in general, our influence on society. But the way he starts this, I think, is good for framing what we want to talk about. He writes that throughout the centuries, Jewish activism diplomacy focused on the effort to secure the Jews' right to observe our traditions without fear or intimidation. The goal, in short, was to be left alone so that we could practice our religion without disturbance from our Gentile hosts. Whatever influence and leverage Jews had was used to help enable their communities to live Jewish lives. Few Jews, if any, considered the possibility of influencing the surrounding Gentiles' personal religious beliefs or practices. With the blossoming of the American Jewish community in the latter part of the 20th century, when religious freedom was self-understood and Jews rose to positions of prominence and influence, the opportunity arose for a much different kind of activism, inspiring the Gentile world to embrace Judaism's universal code. The liberties guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, as well as the culture of tolerance and freedom that characterizes the United States, has given American Jews a level of comfort and confidence that offers the prospect of influencing our Gentile neighbors to adopt the beliefs and lifestyle that we believe to be obligatory upon all mankind. So again, here he's kind of focusing on really on the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the Seven Noahide Laws, which we'll talk about a little bit. But I think a point that he's getting at here could be stated even more broadly, which is that once upon a time, our job was really to survive ourselves, and we weren't necessarily out there to influence others, or also just in terms of the questions about Tikkun Olam and social justice and the like. So it was inconceivable that Jews would be involved in projects to improve humanity when we were just trying to survive for ourselves. But the question we can ask is, does Judaism have ideas and values that we can be imparting to American society? And the fact that we can ask that question is a testament to the importance of this day, that that the creation of the United States of America and the liberty that the founding fathers endowed with this country is the very sort of society that enables us to be able to, of course, this is no longer just a U.S. Sort of phenomenon, but the Western world in general. You could have this discussion in many democratic countries, but the United States was really the ground zero for being able to even have discussion of how Jewish values can influence society for the better. Just to ground ourselves a little bit in a couple of Torah sources, we'll go to page 3. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks talks about frequently how there's the first 11 chapters of Genesis and then the rest of Tanakh. First 11 chapters of Bereshit talk about humanity and the creation of humankind.
And the rest of the Torah and Tanakh is really about the Jewish story. But the reason why there's even sort of this universal component to Torah is because we're also part of humanity, and there's a connection, there's a relationship between who we are as Jews and our responsibilities to humanity. So one place where perhaps this comes out very strongly is a pasuk which we find when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is contemplating telling Avram Avinu about the destruction of Sodom. So his rationale for telling Avram what he's going to do is Ki yidativ lemana sheitzaves banaves beso acharav v'shamru derech Hashem laso tzaka mishpat, where I've singled him out that he may instruct his children and posterity to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is just and right. Now, we could interpret the idea of doing tzedakah mishpat in a number of different ways, some of which might be a little bit more particularistic, but the context here is obviously very important, that this is coming up in the context of the destruction of Sodom. So, in theory, what does Avraham have anything to do with the destruction of Sodom? So you should let it happen, and what does it mean to him? Other than perhaps the fact that his nephew's there, but his goal initially, he doesn't say to Hashem, you know, okay, fine, you're going to destroy these five cities, but please just save Lot and his joke. He has a broader vision of humanity, and here we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's instruction is that Avram's going to teach his children to and his descendants to do what's just and right. In a way that's not just, again, about his own family, but about a much broader swath of society, that there's going to be an influence of justice and righteousness on the broader society. So, in fact, Rabbi Sacks, in his introduction to the book Morality, and Morality was his last book, which was published about 2 months before he passed away, and the book of Morality actually does not contain, it's so much a book that was targeted towards the general world that it doesn't have so many Jewish sources. But the fact that he wanted to write a book like this is indicative of the fact that he thought it was important to bring ideas of morality to the world. But he writes in his introduction that, although I spent my adult life as a religious leader, my first love, long before I decided to become a rabbi, was moral philosophy, which I studied at both Cambridge and Oxford. I meanwhile decided that the best place to begin was within my own tradition of Judaism, which had an almost unbroken conversation on the nature of a good society since the days when Abraham was charged to teach his children the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. So this pasuk was the very influence on Rabbi Sacks through his whole career to try to bring ideas of morality not just to the broader Jewish world outside the Orthodox community, but to the entire world. It's also a pasuk that we have by Matan Torah, which again we might think in some ways is very particularistic. When the Jews are receiving the Torah, that's for the Jews. And Hashem says to Moshe to convey to Bnei Israel, "V'atem tiyuli mamlachas kohanim v'goy kadosh." You'll be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Which again, I could really just, you know, I could imagine that's about the sort of the character of the Jewish people, and not much more than that. But the Sforno and Rav Hirsch say differently. The idea of being a mamlachas kohanim, the havin olhoros ochol hamin ha'enoshi likro kulam b'shem Hashem. Sforno says that the idea of being a kingdom of priests in a holy nation is to teach all of humanity to have a connection with God and to call upon God. He interestingly cites a pasuk at the end here, Amro ki mitzion teitzei Torah, which again, we may think that the idea of ki mitzion teitzei Torah is that the Torah of the Jewish people is going to emanate from Yerushalayim. The context of that pasuk is that Torah is going to be taught to all humanity from Yerushalayim. So that's a Sforno. And likewise, Rav Hirsch says that that just like in terms of, you know, klape pnim, in terms of sort of our internal perception that each one of us is should have the holiness of a Kohen, so to speak, that what we project outwardly also should be a phenomenon of holiness to Hashem. And the idea is that we're a nation that's not asher eno chai laman tachlis atzma. The idea is not that we're going to live for our own purposes, that we're going to influence the entire earth to have respect for Hashem and for the world. So that's also an indication that from the time of the giving of the Torah, the mission of the Jewish people, according to Sforno and Rav Hirsch, was to influence all of humanity. And again, not all Mefarshim read it that way, so that's important to note, but that is a perspective. Then, of course, there's the concept of being an Or Lagoyim, which is an idea that originates from Yeshayahu. So, and this comes up in two places that are not so far apart in Yeshayahu. So in source 7, it says, Ani Hashem Karsicha Betzedek V'achzek B'yadecha V'tzarcha V'atencha L'vriz Am L'Or Goyim. I, God, in my grace, have summoned you, and I've grasped you by the hand. I created you and appointed you a covenant people, a light of nations. And we're going to be a light for the nations. So Rashi here says that Or Goyim means really each tribe of the Jewish people is called its own God, which means that being an Or LaGoyim is not about influencing humanity, but we're influencing each other. So to speak. However, verse 9, Radak says otherwise. It says that Ha'or Hu'atar Shetetzel HaMitzion, again, the light is the Torah that will emanate from Yerushalayim, which is not just for the Jewish people, but there's something that's going to be taught to all of humanity. And it goes on to say, V'ochiach La'amim Rabim, we're going to reproach the people. And then it says, Ki besibas Yisrael yu ha'goyim shomrim sheva mitzvos v'yelchu b'derech tova. That's because of the Jewish people that the nations of the world will keep the seven mitzvahs of Noach, of the descendants of Noach, which we'll talk about a little bit, and they'll walk on a good path. So the idea of being an Or LaGoyim is that we're going to teach the rest of humanity to at least follow the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. And then also in Source 10, in chapter 49 of Yeshayahu, he says, La'ashiv taticha la'or goyim li'yos yeshuasi ad k'tzei ha'aretz. That When it is too little that you should be my servant, and that I raise up the tribes of Yaakov and restore the survivors of Israel, I will also make you a light of nations, that my salvation may reach the ends of the earth. That idea that there's some vision of morality and spirituality, and that's not just for the Jewish people, but we're meant to influence all of humanity in that regard. And the Alshech on this pasuk says that to be an Or LaGoyim is lahair einehem lasos osam safabura likro kulam b'shem Hashem b'tshuva shleima. That we should call upon humanity, we should enlighten them, and we should give them the opportunity to call upon Hashem from a place of tshuva. So, from these sources in Tanakh alone, there is a vision that the Jewish people is going to not just keep the Torah sort of in our own corner, that we're not just going to be in our own shuls, in our own homes, keeping Shabbos and Kashrus and the like, but that there's a broader vision of humanity that we're going to influence. Of course, especially once we're getting to Psukim from Yeshayahu, so that's prophetic, maybe that's something for the future, but there does seem to be some sort of vision that is the end goal of what we're going to do, that we're going to influence humanity. So, question that that we're grappling here with is how has this developed over time, and how does that what does that mean for us today in America? To what extent do we have this obligation? So I'm gonna bring a couple of different cases or a couple different sort of categories of examples of how we might go about this vision. But just to sort of give an overview of what this might look like from the perspective of contemporary society. So a couple years ago, Rabbi Dr. Ari Lam, who's the grandson of Rabbi Norman Lam, was interviewed on a podcast called The Orthodox Conundrum. It left off some of the information here, but the episode was called Elevating the Office. Office is a sitcom. Elevating the Office, something about Jews having influence over pop culture. And what Rabbi Lam very interestingly pointed out is that a lot of our discussion about what it means to be part of society is like when we talk about the YU motto of Torah Umada, that we learn Torah and we also learn worldly knowledge. Well, that's about what we're taking in. That's about what we're learning, what we're absorbing for ourselves, and that matters to God as well. But what Rabbi Lim is pointing out here is that that's not necessarily enough. That our engagement with society shouldn't just be about what we take, but it should be about what we give. And so he says, everybody fundamentally looks at culture and sees something that operates upon us and that we do not operate upon, right? What kinds of things am I allowed to watch? What should I not watch? What should I listen to? What should I not listen to? What should I read? What should I not read? But all that is about, like, how is culture influencing us? So he says that, you know, all Jewish denominations, whether you're, you know, far left, far right, so we all agree that culture is very powerful, and that Judaism perhaps seemingly would have a sort of small influence over it. That's what we would think. And he says, we either have to engage with it delicately to take the good things from it and leave the bad, or we have to hide it. But everybody across the Jewish spectrum fundamentally agrees that culture is too powerful for us, and we have nothing to give to it. And he says, I think this is a fundamental failure of nerve and a lack of courage on the part of the Jewish people, the Am Segula. Our responsibility is actually to bring our values out into the wider world and transform it for the better by abdicating the cultural spheres, especially the pop cultural sphere that reaches so many hundreds of millions of people. By abdicating any contribution to or control over that cultural sphere, we are completely abandoning our responsibility to transform the world for the better. So once he says it like that, in some ways it's very obvious. If we're supposed to be an Or LaGoyim, that means that we should be having influence over society, and to whatever extent that a good part of Western society is engaged with pop culture, so it would seem that we should also have a voice in that. Of course, there's a certain challenge in that, because it might be that, you know, what Torah has to say might not be so interesting to the rest of the world, and it's also it could be a difficult industry to break into. But he points out that with technology and the ease with which we can spread messages, it's also never been entirely insurmountable for Jews to get into Hollywood, except that they've, you know, sort of become part of the Hollywood culture instead of pushing back against it. But he says that there should be an opportunity for Jews who are informed by Torah to not just take in culture to edify ourselves, but to influence society. So what is that? So Rabbi Lam talks about that in the context of pop culture, but I want to talk about some other ways that can look like. So one interesting case example that I was thinking about was the values of Shabbos. We live in a society that's very fast-paced, and if I was thinking about what kinds of values would Judaism bring to society, so I was thinking about Shabbos as an example. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, in the name of Rish Lakish, that Oviko Chavim Shabbos Chayav Misa, a non-Jew observes Shabbos is liable for the death penalty. So bases that on a very technical reading of a pasuk in the Parshas Noach, v'yom v'layla lo yishbotu, that day and night that they shall not cease, which is not really talking about non-Jews, you know, keeping Shabbos or not keeping Shabbos, but it gets interpreted that that day and night non-Jews are not supposed to rest. But we say in Shabbos davening that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the gift of Shabbos, didn't give it to non-Jews. So, seemingly from that perspective, so, you know, maybe there are some limits. So, yes, we're an Or LaGoyim, and maybe we have a lot of values that we want to influence. Maybe Shabbos isn't one of them. Yeah?
There's somebody in my place where I work.
Yeah?
He's from the Seventh Day Adventist. I said, what about? Oh, we observe Shabbat. I said, you do? Yeah. We don't travel on Saturday. We don't turn on a light. We don't shop. Whatever the Jew, the Orthodox Jews, does, we follow that. Now, from what I understand, that a non-Jew is not supposed to observe Shabbos. Right? Correct? Okay. So what do you... And I see here about the death penalty. If they do observe Shabbat, that means the entire Seventh-day Adventist people are going to be wiped out because they're observing Shabbos.
So I'll tell you right now that I have no plans to bring the death penalty upon the Seventh-day Adventists. I will tell you that when I took my SATs on Sunday in Atlanta, Georgia, I took my SATs at what then was called Yeshiva Atlanta. So there were two kinds of people there. There were observant Jews and there were Seventh-day Adventists. That's who we took our SATs with. I'll get to that point a little bit in a second.
I'm gonna get to that point in a second.
So a couple years ago, I stumbled upon this interesting phenomenon that there's a world out there that wants to keep what they call a tech Shabbat. That given the craziness of the influence of screens in our lives, maybe we should, non-observant Jews, non-Jews, keep some sort of Shabbos, also take a break from the screens like the Orthodox Jews do. So, in fact, this whole thing became a phenomenon. It was even written in a book by a woman named Tiffany Schlang. I think she's Jewish. She married somebody who's Jewish also, who had some sort of form of Shabbos. It's not clear to me exactly, how long they had originally kept it, or how long he kept it, if he kept it at all, but had some sort of conception of Shabbos. But when they got married, so they were very busy with their lives at some point, and then they got this sort of opportunity to be part of this technology Shabbat phenomenon, and so they decided to, being that they were Jewish, they were going to do tech Shabbat with some Shabbat rituals and the like, and that was even before things got kind of crazy. So she talks about this journey a little bit, and she says, she gives all this guidance of, what if you think it's too hard? You don't think somebody else is going to get involved to it? She says, you can come up with a lot of reasons not to try it, but I found there are many more compelling reasons why you should. Things will come up. You need to make adjustments. Life can be messy. We are only human. However, what you gain by having this practice in your life is transformative. Our tech Shabbat is a force field of protection that gives us strength, resilience, and perspective and energy for the other 6 days. It lets us achieve the balance we need to live in both the online world and real life. It is our favorite day, and we look forward to it always. So before I go on a little bit, one thing I'll point out is that on this tech Shabbat website, so they say, so if you're not using technology, what can you do on Saturday? You can cook and you can garden. And so apropos to what you were saying, this is not what the Gemara is talking about in terms of Goy Shabbos, that's problematic. So in some ways you could actually say that, maybe that's a good thing. On the one hand, they're not violating the Gemara in terms of the prohibition for non-Jew to keep Shabbos. And at the same time, how beautiful, they're taking something from our tradition that's valuable, that can make a Kiddush Hashem in society. I was very interested, though, to see sort of a response to this by a woman named Kelsey Osgood. I discovered she was apparently interviewed on my favorite podcast, 1840, which I talked about a bit. I think that particular topic I had not listened to, but I was not familiar with her work. She actually converted, and she's writing a book right now on conversion. But she's a writer online. She's written one book. She's working on another book on conversion right now, but she pushes back against this whole thing. She says that that I understand that everybody wants to do a little bit less of a little less technology. We need more boundaries. She says, but efforts to invent a Shabbat outside the religious paradigm are largely doomed to fail. And she gives a number of reasons for that. Number one, because the way we practice Shabbos, the way Orthodox Jews practice Shabbos, is because we do it as part of a community and it's part of our rhythm. And it's one thing, for those of us who've grown up Shomer Shabbos and something that we do, we're part of a community, we do it from a religious framework. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts. That's something that we do, and we also, we have people to do it with. But if it's something that you kind of, try to make yourself on a chumra, so, and eventually, things get in the way, and it's almost like, she says it's a shallow knowledge of the practice which will lead to its ultimate collapse. And she says part of that is because you might think that Shabbos is really about the rest, and it's about the rest, the restoration, about the relaxing. But it's more than that. It's really something that's a commitment. And she says, likewise, if Shabbat is not designed for your own mental flourishing, so then what's it about? So herein lies a potentially insurmountable problem with trying to secularize a practice. Right? We don't do it just because we want to rest and relax and prevent burnout, but we do it for a very unfashionable, very simple, supremely awesome reason, because God told us to. And then she goes on to say, when the people doing the appropriate... So just, you know, on that point, so there is something to be said for that. On one hand, you know, maybe there are ideas and values that we can offer to non-Jewish society. And at the same time, when they're adopted in a token way, it sort of, you know, cheapens what it's about. And it's hard to really, it's hard to get a full appreciation for what it's about if you're only doing sort of like a gimmick of it, which is something that, you know, our world is very into. Like, we like to kind of copy and paste things and say, like, you know, that's a cool Buddhist thing, and that's a cool Jewish thing, and I'm going to, like, kind of put this all together and make this a lifestyle. But, you know, it lacks a certain substance and gravitas. But she also points out, I love this, she points out a bitter irony that, you know, so about a little over 10 years ago, I wasn't living in Queens at the time, but I'm sure... you are all aware of what happened at Citi Field over 10 years ago, the Asifa at Citi Field, with tens of thousands of people coming to protest the internet and to talk about how terrible it is. And most of society laughed at these people and said how primitive they are and how ridiculous this is. And they're, you know, but she points out that all of a sudden, you know, you had the very people who were mocking the Haredim at Citi Field are now the people who are talking about digital Shabbats and doing these anti-phone retreats. So it's basically it's catching up with society. So you know, so she points out that you know, that if you want Shabbos and you want sort of the religious effects of what's going on, then like you have to do the real thing. But on the one hand, to sort of adopt it as a gimmick, and then on the other hand, to like go around and sort of make fun of the people who are really doing it all out, is, you know, I thought that was an interesting irony that you pointed out. Last thing I'll say about Shabbos is, so a couple years ago in the Rabbi's Book Club during COVID, so we read the book, sorry, the pages didn't come out very clear, But Senator Joseph Lieberman wrote a book called The Gift of Rest, and it's based on his experiences in being in politics. So, you know, he had the opportunity to explain to people what Shabbos is, and, you know, people sometimes had to do Shabbos with him if that was the situation. So he was inspired to sort of explain what Shabbos is to the rest of society. And again, it's a beautiful thing. So he writes here that the Sabbath is for everyone, which... in some ways, I chafe at a little bit because there is something very unique about it. And he says, you know, tefillin and, you know, and tallis, those are uniquely Jewish things. Shabbos, though, is a little bit more universal. So there's a part of me that says, you know, v'lo nesata Hashem l'goy harat. So it's that Kodesh Baruch Hu did not give Shabbos to everybody. But the fact is that there are Christians who have some sort of conception of Shabbos because of the influence of the Bible. And then he actually goes on to talk about the way that that some sort of Sabbath was very much a part of American society once upon a time. And again, nowadays that even Christianity has become so secularized, so you might go to church on Sunday, but then Sunday is a normal day. Where even for Protestants, and not just Sunday Adventists, you know, whether it's Sunday or Saturday, whatever, Sunday was really meant to be a holy day, and you know, it talks about Andrew Jackson accusing John Quincy Adams of being a Sabbath breaker. Zachary Taylor wouldn't get inaugurated on Sunday because it's a Sabbath. So people really took this seriously. Now again, this is not Goy Shabbos Chayav Misa because I don't think any Christians are keeping Shabbos Kalacha. But it's an interesting thing to think about that you know, Shabbos in some ways. Once did have a big influence on society. There's also the blue laws, and Senator Lieberman actually favored the blue laws. He thought it was important that society have some sort of sense that there's like a day that, you know, that we're not just being consumers all the time. And there is value to them. There is value to the sort of taking the time to desist from technology. But there's also challenges with that. There's a little bit of complexity there.
The blue laws are very harmful to Jewish store owners.
So, right, so the truth is, especially in Bergen County, that was, ironically, yeah, I would agree with you on that. But, I guess...
When I was a kid, and the stores... Correct. Obviously,
with
no one
shops,
they couldn't open Sunday.
Right, and for Jews in general, to not be able to shop on the weekend is very convenient. So yes, there is an element of that that's problematic, but it does indicate some sort of influence that we've had. Okay, so I mentioned we mentioned at the beginning the idea of the Sheva Mitzvos of Bnei Noach, and. So one question that comes up is, to what extent are we supposed to introduce the seven Noahide laws to society, and should we be trying to convince people to do it, or is it not really our business? So first of all, in terms of teaching Torah in general, so this same Gemara comes and says, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that a non-Jew who learns Torah is also liable for the death penalty, because Torah Tziva Lan and Moshe Morasha Kehilas Yaakov, it's a heritage for us, it's not their heritage. So with that said, of course, and when it comes to the Bible, so in the book that Stu Halpern edited along with Meir Soloveitchik and a couple other people, in celebrating 4th of July, so we recognize that the founding fathers were very much influenced by biblical ideas, and that they're very much part of our tradition, and they write here that. That the Hebrew Bible should remain an integral component of the American future. National community entails that change take place within the framework of a national tradition, and that tradition, of course, is flexible. But they say the Hebrew Bible is something sort of anchors us in history and in the past, and it gives us some sort of moral compass. The fact that on the one hand. We have this halacha that non-Jews are not supposed to learn Torah. That might really more apply to Torah Shebal Peh than Torah Shebichtav. I think there's sort of an understanding, especially by the time of the Gemara, that non-Jews, Christians were learning of the Bible. But Torah Shebal Peh is a uniquely Jewish way of connecting with the Torah and Hashem. And at the same time, there's this influence that a positive influence that the Bible has had in society. The Gemara in Bava Kamma interestingly says that when it comes to the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, that they saw that Hashem saw at some point that humanity was not keeping the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, but he tiran lahem, and then they became permitted. So Rav Yosef comes. So the Gemara comes and explains like what the fact that they violated the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach means that they should get off scot free. That's like that's basically letting people get away with murder, literally. So he says, no, somebody who keeps the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is someone who's ke'ena metzuva ve'osa, that there's still an idea of Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, but they're not obligatory. But la'alacha, that this Gemara is not necessarily accepted. We do believe that there's an aspect of keeping Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and something that I think I included it in here. Something that Baalei Tosfos point out is that, as far as teaching non-Jews Torah, one thing that certainly we're allowed to teach non-Jews is we're allowed to teach the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. In fact, Baalei Tosfos say it's a mitzvah. So there is that. There is a sense that Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is still relevant, and even though certain parts of Torah we would not indiscriminately teach non-Jews. Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, it seems like that there is that it's worthwhile teaching. Yeah.
In my old neighborhood, on the Shabbos morning, two people walked into shul. Fine. They didn't know. So they sat down and they even wore a talis. So the gabbai of the shul went over to them. How did they call you up? What is your name? He says, we're not Jewish. My friend and I were not Jewish. We just came to look around. So Are they liable to a death penalty because they walked into the shul?
No. First of all, the Beis HaMikdash is Beis Filei Kari L'chol HaAmim. Beis HaMikdash, anybody's allowed to worship. So again, Torah Shebaal Peh in particular is where we limit this. But also, I don't think Gemara means this literally when it says Chiyuv Nisa. We're not talking about actually carrying execution, but it's making a point that that there's a distinction of what's for us and what's for them. So there are Shiva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. You know, on the one hand, the Gemara seems to indicate that. That they were loosened, but it still seems to be relevant. It's an idea of teaching Shavuot Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and it's just as far as learning ideas go that relate to Shavuot Mitzvot B'nei Noach, it certainly has had an influence on our country. And the Rambam in Source 21 on page 8, the Rambam points out Sefer Mitzvos that you know as far as spreading ideas of Avas Hashem. And we have a mitzvah, Ve'hatas Hashem l'kecha b'chol levavcha, that you're supposed to love Hashem. So how do you show your love for Hashem? By sharing that love with others. That's what you do. When you love something, you share it with others. So the third positive mitzvah, Source 21, is to love Hashem. The way we do that is bringing the love of Hashem to others. And he cites a sifrei that says that this is not just, again, about teaching Jews to love Hashem, but we're supposed to do it like Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, Vasanefesh Asher Asu B'Charan. So Chazal understood the souls that Avram and Sarah made in Charan, they taught non-Jews about Hashem, they converted them. So part of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, in theory, is to teach non-Jews about Hashem and to spread the Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach. So the question that comes up is this something that's obligatory, permissible, or something that we should stay away from nowadays? So Rav Moshe Sternbach in Shulchan Aruch HaHagos says in Source 20, Yesh baze iser chamor. It's a very severe prohibition to teach or to promote the Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach. And he gives three reasons for it. Number one, because technically speaking, the Christians are still doing Avodah Zarah because they believe in the Trinity, and the Trinity is technically Avodah Zarah. So a lot of poskim really limit that to being Jews. Jews are not allowed to believe in for Jews to believe in the Trinity would be Avodah Zarah. For non-Jews to do it might not be Avodah Zarah. But Schoenbach says that if you're going to call Christians B'nai Noach, but they still believe in the Trinity, so you're kind of giving them credit for something that they don't deserve credit for, and he says that's a distortion of Torah. Number two, he says the way it's going to prevent Mashiach from coming, if the non-Jews are better than the Jews, so if the non-Jews all do tshuva, they accept mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and they're checking off all their boxes, but the Jews are not. That's bad for the Jews, and that's going to delay the coming Mashiach. So that's reason number two. But reason number three is that we don't want them to mix in our religion, and we shouldn't mix in theirs either, right? If we don't want them to come and tell us that, you know, you guys, if you really want to be good people, you want to be saved, then you have to accept Jesus. So we shouldn't be doing that to other people also. Number one,
Because they believe in the Trinity, that doesn't mean that they should have a court system and stealing and killing. I don't see why talking about Shepherds of Noah is terrible because they believe in the Trinity.
It's a fair question. So he says here in the third last line, Rak Latovas Hanoshios Nucha Lidrosh Bam Kama Dinim Shagam Bnei Noach Mitzuva, Ben Noach Mitzuva, Shiyazu Gneva Ritzicha Varayos Visamim. I know that drugs are part of the Shev Mitzvahs, but he says that we could try to influence society that people should be moral, that people should have sexual morals, that they shouldn't kill and steal, but to go on missionizing Shiva Mitzvahs B'Noach, that we should stay away from. I think he's looking at really from, if it's about teaching people to believe in God and all that, so that he feels like that will create animosity if we're trying to force religion of any sort upon other people. And that I'm you know, in terms of actual missionizing Shem and Sos B'nai Noach, I'm actually sympathetic to. And that's not a hypothetical, because on page 9, in the year 1983, Lubavitcher Rebbe gave a whole sicha about the necessity to influence non-Jews to fulfill the 7 Noahai laws. And he said it's not just about making sure that the world's a decent place to live, but principally because God has commanded so, that that there's still a relevance of Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and this is the Rabbi Lishitasa, that just like we have an obligation to teach Jews to keep their mitzvahs, we have an obligation to teach non-Jews to keep their mitzvahs also. And he says this is particularly so during the time of exile, whereas like if Schoenbach would say that during exile we don't want to have anything to do with this, he says it's particularly during exile that we should do this. He tells this whole story that there's a Jewish guy who's wealthy, has a yacht, he brings his non-Jewish partner on the yacht, and then the Jewish guy is praying, and the non-Jewish guy, he says, at the end here, he says, he would ask the captain of the yacht where east is. Eventually the captain was trying to understand what was going on here. So he says, if you, a successful man who employs others, including the captain, consider proper to bind yourself with God 3 times a day through prayer, and are ready to interrupt your activities to face east to pray properly, I too shall begin to think of God. So the rabbi says, look, you can have a great influence if you, if we go out and we teach people about Hashem, so maybe they'll be inspired also. So he feels very strongly about this. So much so, it was so well known that he was doing this that on the 80th birthday of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Ronald Reagan called upon that day to be a national day of reflection. And he cited, he has provided a vivid example of the eternal validity of the 7 Noahide laws, a moral code for all of us, regardless of religious faith, may go from strength to strength. So Ronald Reagan appreciated this. So that was the Rebbe's perspective. And so, also, on page 12, kind of like Rav Schoenbach, Rav Moshe Feinstein, for similar reasons, was against sort of missionizing Sheva Mitzvahs, more because he felt like, we should, we don't want them to mix with our religion, we're not going to mix with theirs. He says in a more positive sense that, at the end of the day, this will all work itself out, and, in terms of belief in God, that will all work itself out in the days of Mashiach. So, fine, yeah.
Third reason that Moshe Schoenbach bothers me, I think, the most, because he said it's going to make us look bad. That's the whole Yonah argument, that they don't want to go to Nineveh and tell them, because they do children, we don't do children, it makes us look bad.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because that was the next thing I brought in here, actually, is that we do see an example in Tanakh of apparently the importance of having non-Jews do tshuva. So Sefer Chassidim says that we see a Noahide sitting, if one can correct him, one should, since God sent Yonah to Nineveh to return them to his path. And Rav Soloveitchik also felt that there's something worthwhile of restating the universal dimension of our faith, especially when we are sorely persecuted and are apt to regard the whole world in purely confrontational terms. That's a good idea. So questions can be asked as follows, right? Is there an obligation to spread Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, which Rambam seems to think that there is. I didn't bring it in here. The Rambam seems to think there is, but most Rishonim and Poskim seem to, other than the Lubavitcher Rebbe, don't seem to think there's an obligation to. Is it permitted to? So Rav Schoenbach was obviously very against it, but I think though the way we view this question can have some sort of influence on what our vision of American society is, because if we think that they do what they do and we do what we do, so we're going to leave them alone, and that's it. And what I want to point out on page 13 and 14, this is where I get to the part that my including certain things does not involve endorsement. It's really throughout the denominational spectrum of Judaism, there are people who believe that Judaism should have some sort of influence on society and some sort of moral influence on society, maybe not directly in promoting Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, But there's still some idea, if the idea of Shabbat Mitzvah and Noach has some sort of code morality, there's some idea that's preserved there, this idea being an Or L'Goyim that we should promote it. So one example of this is a group called the Truah, the Rabbinic Call for Human Rights, and so they talk about being, you know, moral voices to lead Jewish communities in advancing democracy and human rights for all people in the United States, Canada, Israel, and the occupied Palestinian territories. That tells you a little bit about what they stand for. And they talk about the shofar of liberation. That's really the Tikkun Olam perspective, which part of the reason why the whole question of Tikkun Olam and social justice is so contentious, we didn't do it for a long time because it was not shayach in previous societies to do it, but clearly from this perspective, and this is something, you know, I think most liberal Jews identify somewhat with what you would see in Truah. So they believe that that the goal of Judaism is some sort of ethical system, and where our job is to improve the world, and so, you know, essentially we're trying to influence humanity to adopt a moral code. On the other hand, if you go to page 14, relatively new organization called the Coalition for Jewish Values, which is an Orthodox rabbinic organization. So they are very clear that they're reacting to sort of the Truah kind of situation where, you know, these groups think that they're promoting Jewish values, but they're not promoting Jewish values. We're promoting Jewish values. But they say, we know that biblical values are the nurturing roots of first world civilizations. It recognizes the efforts of the American pioneers to give expression to those ideals in the founding documents of the United States. We promote these same values today through education, advocacy, and mobilization of support within and beyond the Jewish conservative community. And they talk about the West being a place of Judeo-Christian values. So this is an organization also that believes that there is a place for Jewish values to be influencing American law and the morality of American law, albeit coming from a very different direction. But the Tzad HaShav is that apparently, you know, it's not a sort of sense which some Orthodox communities might have, where, you know, leave us alone, we're going to do what we do, and if you give us the funding for our schools and don't interfere with us or whatever, we'll be good citizens and leave it at that. There's an active desire to influence the moral direction of the country. So one's view of Shabbat Mitzvah Bnei Noach really can have an impact on, you know, what kind of legal policies I advocate for. And again, my goal is not to get caught up in the details of, and I'm not taking sides here, but so Moshe Feinstein, again, was not in favor of promoting Shabbat Mitzvah Bnei Noach per se, and in general, tried not to really interfere. He did not feel like that Judaism should interfere with American law. But he was asked a question about the governor of New York asked him about the view of Judaism on the death penalty, and he gave his view. And he said that you know, the Torah believes that in a society where murder is rampant, that perhaps there is a place for the death penalty, either as a deterrent or to make sure that dangerous people are kept off the street, whatever the reason is. So Ramosha did give that view. Same token, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that from a halachic point of view, every Jew should be opposed to capital punishment. So my goal, again, is not to talk about the death penalty. My goal is to say that these poskim did have some sort of sense, at least in some cases, that Jewish values have something to not only teach, you know, not just about the pace of society and Shabbos and pop culture and the like, but the very direction of the government. This comes up also in abortion as well, and in a very strong sense, because according to Shabbat Mitzvah Bnei Noach, non-Jews really, according to many poskim, should not be allowed to do abortions at all. And so what Rabbi Weider explains in this article is that if you want to take the view of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you actually have a very, you know, internally sound system of logic of saying that that Jews should actively campaign against abortion because it's against the Shabbat Mitzvah Bnei Noach. And what? You take the Lubavitcher Rebbe all the way to the end. So that is a legitimate position to take. And at the same time, on page 16, he cites Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Moshe Feinstein's idea that, and Rav Moshe Feinstein was a machmir on abortion, but the idea of Rav Moshe opposed legislation in any era that might give any religion a voice in government matters. So Rabbi Weider comes out and says that, yes, ideally all non-Jews would observe the Noahide laws. Nonetheless, halacha does not require Orthodox Jews or Jewry to ensure that observance by our fellow American citizens. Again, there are some views in Rishonim that maybe there is an obligation, but most poskim would say that that's not. And he says, beyond these considerations, religious freedom in the United States has allowed Orthodox Jewry, despite being a tiny minority, to flourish religiously without government persecution, even in eras when the United States was an overwhelmingly religious Christian society, country. This setting makes me historically and ideologically uncomfortable with opposing my religious beliefs on fellow Americans. So, what you do get here is that, you know, you can talk about whether we should absolutely be missionizing Shemeshus B'nai Noach. Should we stay completely away? But there's also perhaps sort of a middle approach that says that, you know, we don't want to impose. Maybe there's something that Judaism has to say about it. Maybe we can offer that opinion, but we don't necessarily want to oppose that onto society. Professor Chaim Zeman, I think, very beautifully, you know, not talking about any one particular political issue, but he says that modern Orthodox Jews in particular have what to show society just about how we approach politics in general. And basically, he wrote this right after the 2016 election. And he said that, you know, most of America is very much grouped by, like, you know, I work and live with the people who share my political views, whether you're in this side or that side. He says that the modern Orthodox community, unlike most communities, there's really a mix. And I see that in our shul also. We have people with a variety of political views in our shul. So he, you know, on the one hand, he said he was concerned about the extent to which one's, you know, political views are leading them to assimilate instead of to Torah ideas, to political ideologies. But he says that modern Orthodoxy is positioned because we have, you know, such a, you know, variety of views within our shuls and the like. So he said modern Orthodoxy is poised to exemplify behavior that can bring us together and maybe point a way forward. We are well positioned to play a leading role in this effort. It's our time to become an Orla Goyim, to be a beacon of light for United States of America. So here, he's not talking about being Orla Goyim in terms of advocating particular policies, but just like sort of the way that we can, hold on to nuance, to believe that issues are complex and to not give in to polarization. So he thought that that was important. And that itself is something that Judaism can offer to America. I'll leave off by talking about Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. You know, the view that Rabbi Sacks obviously is going to give, Rabbi Sacks was not somebody who was getting up and saying that, you know, non-Jews really should be keeping all the mitzvot b'nei Noach, we should be advocating for policies of that sense. But he very much believed that Judaism needs to have an influence on the rest of the world. And part of that comes from Tanakh, you know, the God of Abraham, the God of Yonah.
Rabbi, when was the Abraham nation created?
A long time ago. I don't know.
It was 5,800 years.
So a long time ago.
Prior to Abraham, there was someone else who was a spiritual leader who would guide them, no? Who wouldn't just be Abraham?
Abraham was the one who came to find Hashem on his own, and he really started it all. So he talks about the heroism of Abraham, the message of hope that Judaism can convey. So that's what he has sort of on these first couple pages. But then he goes on to say on page 19, on page 251, he says, "No faith has endowed the human person with more dignity, seeing us all, whatever our faith or lack of it, as the image and likeness of God, holding all human life sacred, believing that we all have within us a power to defeat the evil that lies in each of us, and insisting on the most improbable of all religious beliefs, that more than we have faith in God, God has faith in us, and that we will never lose faith." And he says that the world in the 21st century needs that faith, and in an age of ecological devastation, needs the Jewish reminder that we are placed on earth, as was Adam in the garden, to serve and conserve it. In an age of economic inequalities, it needs the Jewish insistence on tzedakah, charity as justice. In an age of terror, it needs the Jewish insistence on the sanctity of life. In an age of religious extremism, it needs to hear the Jewish denial that you can win your place in heaven by murdering the innocent on earth. The world needs that difficult, often misunderstood, and reviled Jewish belief that though its religion is not religion of all humanity, its God is the God of all humanity, so that the righteous of all faiths have a share in the world to come. He says that Jews have turned inwards, they need to turn outwards. They are conscious of being different, but so is every member of a minority, and in a global age, every group is a minority. Our uniqueness is our universality, and it's precisely by sharing our uniqueness that we enlarge the heritage of humankind. Jews are not the only people who seek God, live lives of faith, work for the betterment of humanity, or count themselves blessed by God's love. They are not alone. I've argued for Judaism, for a Judaism that has courage to engage with the world and its challenges. Faith begets confidence, which creates courage. This is how Jews live in the past and should live in the future, for they are the people of the journey to a distant destination begun by Abraham, continued by 100 generations of ancestors, and it still beckons. Judaism is a faith in the future tense. Jews were and are still called upon to be the voice of hope in the conversation of humankind. So for Rabbi Sacks, first of all, Judaism benefits from being in dialogue with the nations of the world. But you know, he lays out here all these different things that Jewish faith has and belief has to offer. And how could we not, if it's going to make the world a better place, how could we not engage with that? And we need to have the confidence to be able to do that. And I'll just leave off with a very beautiful short eulogy there of Herschel Schechter gave for Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And he talks about the mitzvah of halach b'drachov, that we should follow in the ways of Hashem. Hashem created humanity, b'tzam Elokim, that all human beings are created in the image of God. But there's actually a pasuk in Dvarim, V'ra'ukol ame ha'aretz, and all the people of the earth shall see Hashem's name is proclaimed over you. The other nations will see that B'nai Israel have succeeded in preserving Tzelem Elokim. He says that's what it means to be an Orla Goyim, is to preserve the Tzelem Elokim of all of humanity. That's being an Orla Goyim. He says Rav Soloveitchik explains that being an Orla Goyim does not result from our keeping mitzvahs of Shabbos, Kashrus, Taras, Mishpacha, but rather by preserving our Tzelem Elokim, following the ways of Hashem with honesty, integrity, and work ethic. And this was one of Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks' extraordinary accomplishments. For so many years, the Jewish people did not function as an Orla Goyim, but Rabbi Sacks published and spoke so much in public about the meaning of Tzelem Elokim, had to live with Midos Tovos and Derech Eretz. So, I think, you know, on some level, when we talk about the potential for Judaism to have an influence on the values of American society, again, there's so many different more angles that we could explore, but there's clearly, our religion is clearly very rich, and we believe that we don't follow our religion just because we do, but because that it brings goodness to the world and that it enriches our lives. So, from that sense, obviously, there's what that we can teach the rest of the world. I would not necessarily say very strongly that, you know, the way that we influence society is directly through the vehicle of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach and kind of through that very technical perspective. And I would not go to the lengths of the Lubavitcher Rebbe there. But the idea that Judaism has much to engage with society, and that if we are an Orla Goyim, that we have ideas, we have values that we should teach. So not only does that enrich us, but that's, I believe, that's what Hashem wants of us. And our job is not necessarily to coerce these ideas upon the rest of society, but to have the confidence to bring those values out and to explain like why these are meaningful and why these are valuable to humanity. So that is something that we are called upon to do, something that's very meaningful, and something that because of the gifts that America has given us, we're really in a position